ball spark.
You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We're going to talk PGA Championship. We're going to talk the draft lottery. We'll talk about Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. That's kind of what I've got on our radar. With the PGA being right here in the great state of Oklahoma, we will talk a bunch about what's going on. What about Southern Hills? What about that golf course? The changes. A lot of talk about the changes that have been made, kind of a redesign back to the original layout that Perry Maxwell had designed way back when. Local guys, I'm sure there will be tons of orange and some crimson, but tons of orange because of the amount of OSU guys that are in the field up there at Tulsa. We've got pairings since the show yesterday. I picked out three early, late, which means early on Thursday, late on Friday, and then vice versa, where I think the champion comes from. We'll make our picks. Here's how the picks will work. You pick three, any three you want, and then your dark horse will be anybody outside the top 25 in this week's official world golf rankings. So what do you guys think? Who do you guys think is the guy? That's how it'll go. Just pick three guys in order, like your biggest favorite, your next favorite, and then a dark horse from outside the top 25 in the official world golf rankings. That'll be coming up at the end of the show. The Celtics, boy, that offense ran dry in the third quarter. It looked like they couldn't miss there toward the end of the first half. In control at halftime, Miami's defense clamped down a little bit, and the Heat run away from the Celts and win Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And, of course, before that, the draft lottery. Lady Luck shines down on the Thunder. It's Oklahoma City with the top four pick. We'll talk about who will be drafted. Who do you think ought to be drafted? Who would you pick? Thunder now have, so it's locked in. Number 2, number 12, and number 30 are the picks in the first round for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's what we got on your mind, on our minds. Feel free to chime in. 225-9698. Also keep you updated on the college golf. It's both OU and OSU in strong positions to advance out of the regional into the national tournament. Both teams with a chance to win their regionals as well. So 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, there are a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com. The other is to download the Paragon app. Download that app. You've got it all. You've got three radio stations. You've got the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight, thepennynews.com. Check out the new deals online or print editions. We'll start filtering out this afternoon into tomorrow. So pick up a free copy of the Penny News at your favorite local newsstand. Big Elk TV, Paragon TV are also there when you get a chance during the school year. Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, and, of course, the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, most days you could go back and check that out online, KADSAM.com or iTunes. And I say most days because normally that thing doesn't go off when Jared's not here because I forget every single time. Yesterday was just one of those days. It doesn't matter. We're moving on down life's path, Jared. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good.
I'm very good. Doesn't I'm very it, good after last night.
Doesn't it feel
happy like about the rain?
It rained. I mean, could it have been a better day in the state of Oklahoma?
Perfect night. Perfect night. Well, yeah, it could have been.
How?
They could be playing in the Western Conference Finals. But you see what I'm saying. Yes, it was a great night. Got the rain coming in.
I will tell you, I was really glad it rained when it did. So I was getting a little bored with the baseball I was watching.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes, I was getting a little bored with it. So as soon as I saw that lightning strike, I almost felt like telling the umpires, lightning, let's go. Let's go. Lightning, right there. I saw it. Even if I didn't see it, I was about to yell that. But anyhow, did you have games yesterday?
No. Nope. We play Friday nights.
Friday nights.
We had nothing. We have nothing tonight. Practice tomorrow. Supposed to have a tournament on Saturday, but there's not enough teams in the tournament. Guess Boy. They heard Canute was going to be in it, so they decided not to play.
Oh, dear. Boy, I've heard it all now. Well, if you're not doing anything on Saturday and Sunday, you can go across to the other because...
Yeah, I heard there's a big one.
The 10U, the teams that are coming.
Pretty tough.
Yo, Eagles. If they've got the big head, they better swell her down.
Sometimes they need that, though, right? That's what we wanted, though. We wanted this tough competition from outside to
Absolutely.
Come in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know? I caught my kid talking about, hey, Dad, remember last year when we went to the state tournament and they had a big poster of all the teams and their records? I said, yeah. It's pretty cool, huh? Yeah, this year we want zero on our record.
Oh, yeah. Zero losses.
I thought, okay, pump the brakes. I thought to myself, these girls need a couple losses. They need that.
The Eagles may get some this week. There's some good teams. There's some teams that have been here that have beaten them. There's also some teams that you notice the names because of they're in the state tournament.
Yeah.
When Sarah's gotten there.
So probably the best tournament in the state is happening right here.
Man,
10U.
The 10U is going to be a good one, man. There are a lot of good teams.
Man.
A lot of good teams.
Check that out. We are seeking another tournament in another town, so we'll see what happens.
Well, I'm going to be at the best tournament in the country as well. It's just not going to be 10U baseball.
That's right.
It's going to be PGA championship
golf. Yes.
Okay, let's talk about what happened last night. The Oklahoma City Thunder, second straight year that they tried to finagle their way into high draft picks via the lottery. This year it worked as the Thunder end up with the second overall pick. The franchise has had big-time luck, at least when it was the Supersonics. The number two pick has had paid off huge dividends. You know the two number two picks that Seattle had? Obviously,
well,
you know one of them.
One's obvious is Durant. It was the other one.
The glove. Gary Payton.
Gary Payton. That
was the number two overall pick. So hopefully that
my history
that
before
part of
the Thunder
luck.
Is a little blurry. It's like, they're way over there in the Northwest.
Yeah, but
I didn't start
exciting.
Paying attention until we knew.
Oh, really?
That they were coming.
Sean Kemp was one of my favorite guys, just because he was fun. Gary Payton was one of my least favorite guys because he talked trash to MJ. So you know, he took the good with the bad. So hopefully that not only the lottery luck, but then being in position and making the right pick, that luck transfers down from the Pacific Northwest here to Oklahoma City. It'll be the first time that Oklahoma City itself has had the number two pick in the NBA draft. Just kind of looking around at guys. I mean, who do you want?
How many mock drafts have you looked at?
I've looked at a bunch of them.
Me too.
I've looked at a bunch. But for you, who do you hope is there at number two?
Well, as soon as that came down, everyone was blowing up my phone, all my buddies, saying we have to get, am I saying it right, Banchero or Banchero?
Banchero, I think.
Banchero. And, you know, I've been enamored with Holmgren for a while after watching him play a few games this past season. You know, does the slim stature give me pause? Maybe a little bit, but, you know, Durant's still slim, and he's still one of the best in the league. And so I don't think you can go wrong either way, but who do I want? I still have a slight lean for Holmgren. How about you? I think I know who you want. Who do you want? The two mocks I've seen, one have Holmgren going one, and the other one have Holmgren going number two.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't think you can go wrong. Clearly, but those are some pretty top-notch guys. But who do you want?
I do not want – now that you know that it's the number two pick, I would be really disappointed – if they choose Banchero.
Yeah.
I think
now,
he,
wait, now let me ask you, what if Holmgren is off the what if Holmgren's taking
Jabari Smith? I don't care which one.
Okay.
Okay, now at some point we're going to have to come off the fence and tell which one we want more. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We're going to have to be on the record of, oh, I think this guy is better. We hope you get that guy, you know, or vice versa. Banchero, I think, is the most ready right this second. But the Thunder aren't ready right this second. They don't, you know what I'm saying? They don't need the most NBA-ready 19-year-old. They need the most NBA-polished 22-year-old. For 2 years, I mean, I think next year, the one thing I do believe is this pick probably guarantees that we're not going to see what we've seen the last 2 years. I don't think we're going to see just a full-on tank.
I think that question's been answered. And that's kind of what I was saying yesterday, depending where that ball
that's
drops.
That's right. If it ended up being the 7th and the 12th pick, then maybe that's not the case. But I think they're going to get a player, in my mind, either Holmgren or Jabari Smith. That's going to allow you, and then even the 12th pick too, which we'll get to, but that's going to allow you to start to see, okay, here's what it's going to look like. You know, and I've been a big proponent of don't just take a big to take a big, but you've got you're going to have a shot at either two that can be franchise changing type guys. I don't personally believe Banchero's that. And so, you know, at the 3rd pick, if you liked a couple of other guys better, I personally don't believe that you had to take the big just because you need one. If you thought Jaden Ivey was the guy, if you thought Shaedon Sharpe was the guy, take him. You can always get a bigger guy at 12, right? If that's, you know, now that you have a shot at those two guys, I think that theory goes out the window unless, and man, is this not a Presti-ish move, but not at the top of the draft, right? I mean, maybe you could say Russ was, unless he falls in love with Sharp. 6'6", should be the number one. He should have been the number one player in the class of 23, tried to reclassify, didn't get to play at Kentucky. It never, you know, it just didn't become eligible. But he's got great size, long, explosive, and can shoot. He's not going to be available at 12. Right. But I don't think, you know, this was a guy that if things didn't go great last night, I think this was going to be your guy. But because things did, I think you can take him out of the mix. I think. Just because you have those two, Holmgren or Jabari Smith, available. Now, when you look at those two guys, Holmgren's a year older. He averaged 14 this year, 10 rebounds, 2 assists. He shot 61% from the field. Part of that, I think, the disparity that we're going to see here as far as shooting up from the field is because of the conference he played in. Jabari Smith was playing in the SEC. Holmgren was in the West Coast Conference. You know, at the rim, I don't know how much resistance there was. But he shot 61% from the field, 39% from three. He made 72% of his free throws, and he blocked about 4 shots a game. You know, and those numbers translated, you know, the Arkansas game where Gonzaga got beat, I think you go back and look, when he was on the floor, Gonzaga was right there, if not holding their own or better. When he got in foul trouble is when things fell apart. Jabari Smith on the other side, 17 a game, about 3 less rebounds at 7-4. He only shot 43% from the field. So does that give you pause as far as in the paint numbers? Because he shot 42% from 3 and 80% from the line. Only blocked a shot. So the rim protection obviously is in the favor of Holmgren. Shooting, similar. You give the nod to Jabari from the outside. I've got Banchero written down here, but I just don't think that's the pick. I think it's one of these two guys.
Does think like this, the guy, whoever the pick may be, does the process involve, well, who would pair better with SGA and Josh Giddey? Who would be that that third leg of the tripod? Who would be the number three of the big three of the Thunder? You know, what they're trying to build. You know what I mean?
I do.
So they, does Presti look at that and think, okay, now this guy is going to pair well because he can play off ball better because of what these other two guys do, et cetera? I mean, does that go into the thought process?
100%. It's got to. But I think that's more pick and roll defensively. I think defensively, if you're looking that way, if you believe that Holmgren can hold his own on the offensive side with what Smith can do, then you take him. I mean, of course, you don't have the choice, though. That's the thing. You're going to have one of these two guys, and one of them's going to fall to you, and you're going to take him. Now, which one you hope that is, that's what you got to figure out, I guess, because I don't think there's any doubt that Holmgren is the better rim protector, the defensive side of things. Now, does that mean that he can move laterally enough to guard pick and roll versus Smith? You know, that those are things. But the part of me would have rather had the second pick than the first, because you don't have to make that choice. It gets made for you. And then you take the other one. Or at least in my mind, you take the other one. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of me that hopes it's Holmgren. Because I think he's the less safe of these three guys, of the three big guys. I think he's the one that has the most bust potential between he and Smith and Banchero. I don't think Banchero has hardly any bust potential. He's just going to be a pretty good player. I think Smith could be a superstar, and I think Chet Holmgren could be too. But I think if Smith doesn't reach his ceiling, that floor is higher than what Holmgren's floor is, right? He's the riskiest of the three to be a bust, but I also think he has the most upside because of what he can do on both ends of the floor. It's really, yeah. It's a, you know, it almost feels like a no-lose situation for the Thunder, mm-hmm, because of where they're going to draft, but I do think there's some little differences between those two guys. But the one thing they both can do, or at least showed that they could do at the collegiate level, is spread the floor by shooting it from the outside. Oh, both nearly 40% from three. Well, Smith was. He was 42. Holmgren was 39. You know, that's things that have to be done in the modern NBA with the big guys, and both of those guys possess that ability.
Totally agree. And like you said at the top, Thunder have had, or the franchise at wherever it was, has had some great success at number two, especially most recently, and I say recent, it's been over a decade now, but with Sam Presti making that pick at number two. So we've been, you know, whether it be 2, 7, 12, 30, whatever it may be, we've always had that saying of, in Sam we trust. So you got to know he's, you know, I got a lot of trust in him that he's going to pick the right guy, whoever that may be. It's exciting that there's a lot of guys that have less bust potential at the top, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's weird because I don't know, outside of those top two and maybe Sharp, and that's the one guy that I still, in the back of my mind, go, what if he just falls in love with this guy? And people are going to be screaming from the hilltops.
Right.
If he drafts him.
Yeah.
But he has not – you can say whatever you want about the mid-round, the late-round, first-round picks. There's been some hits. There's been some misses. But when he's drafted in the top five, he's not missed and not even gotten close to missing. He's done it three times, and he's drafted three Hall of Famers.
Right.
And so that's where the Sharp thing – watch out. I mean, you know what I mean? It feels like the smartest guy in the room type pick. But at the top of the draft, he has been the smartest guy in the room.
Absolutely.
Bar none.
Absolutely, yes.
So we'll see. We'll see. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be one of those two guys, either Holmgren or Jabari Smith. Now, for the pick at number 12, I think however it goes at the top matters a ton with who he picks next. And here's why. I think if he drafts, if Smith is there at two and that's the pick, then I think you could maybe even look at another big man as being the pick at 12. Is it Mark Williams from Duke? Rim protector. know, Duren, depending on who falls, Jalen Duren, Coloco from Arizona, you know, which one of those guys might be there? Walker Kessler, maybe, from Auburn, pairing those two college teammates together.
Yeah.
So, because if you've got Holmgren, I don't think you need to worry about that rim protection.
Right.
If you draft Smith, maybe you do. Two other guys that it looks, for me, if it's Holmgren is the pick, and so then you're looking maybe at more shooting or wing-type players, I think there's two that'll be there, and you take your pick. One of those is a guy that everybody's familiar with around here, Ochai Agbaji from Kansas. Now, he's 22. He averaged 19, shot 47% from the field, 41 from three this year. He got steadily better in 4 years at Kansas from behind the arc, and a career-high 41 this year. Or a guy that's 19 years old, played 1 year at Ohio State, it's Malachi Branham. He shot 50% from the field, 41.6 from three. So now, when you look at those two side by side, one's obviously 3 years younger. Now, if you see the improvement from Branham that you saw from Agbaji, now you're talking about a guy that can step into the NBA and shoot it above 40% from behind the arc. So those are two guys, as far as shooting, that everyone knows the Thunder needs shooting.
Yeah.
Maybe those are two of the guys. If Holmgren's the pick and you're not as worried about protecting the rim because you've got his rim protection on your side, then you go more of a wing shooting type player.
Go after needs. Yeah. Atlas and after two, I haven't studied that far down to 12. You have, but I trust what you say. But, yeah, I think go after needs. Go after shooting to shore up the shooting needs, which makes those other big three, like I mentioned, a lot better. Gives them, takes the pressure off them a lot. Do you think they'll use the 30 pick?
I don't know. I was looking – one of the mock drafts I saw had Caleb Houston, and I started looking at him. Kind of a disappointing player at Michigan as a freshman, but he's 6'8", and he shot 36% from three as kind of what would probably end up being a power forward type guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he probably fits if you draft that player. You know, some of the mocks have him taken at 12, a guy from New Zealand or Australia. That, you know, that's the interesting thought about it is there's no way they're going to draft all three and have them here next year.
No.
And so do you take a swing at somebody at 12 or do you try at 30 that's not coming but can develop? You know, a Poku-type pick.
Sure.
Somebody like that, because you have three first-round picks in this draft and the treasure trove of first-rounders you've got coming up.
Yeah.
You know, that's the interesting thing about this is the Thunder can take those big swing-type picks in the middle of the first round and late because of what they've got coming. Either the firepower to trade for somebody, the firepower – I mean, it seems like it's really hard to move up in the NBA draft for some reason. Mm-hmm. I think part of it is people view it as, say, a four-player draft this year, for sure three. You know, and so those top three, you can't hardly move in, but then maybe you can do some things behind that. You know, the 12 and the 30, if you like somebody that's at number 10, you know, that's
yeah, package
a
it up. Package. Yeah, and
you have so many more.
Right.
I mean, what's a 2024 first rounder to you? You've got tons.
And you'd rather pay one guy than two.
That's right. So,
or have to deal them away or something. But yeah,
I think that's. I don't think there's going to be any movement at two. You're happy with whoever you get.
Yeah.
But I think maybe if there's somebody that when it gets to 9, 10, right in that area,
you feel like
that
you
they
want
really
them,
want, maybe they put the 12 and the 30 and even another first rounder to move up into that spot. But man, what a great night. I mean, just a great night.
So I got to ask, were you at the ball fields when that was going down, or were you home?
No,
by then?
I was eating supper.
Okay.
Not having the TV on, not paying attention to my phone, and it was buzzing like a bee over there because multiple groups were texting multiple things.
Airplane mode, my friend. That's what I did.
And so
I see you send out a text. I'm going to airplane mode because I, you know, streaming and I'm cutting the cable and streaming. The pro is that you pay less. The con is you're a little behind the rest of the
right.
world, and so my phone would buzz before something would happen. So I totally went to airplane mode and yelled at the TV over the draft lottery. Never thought I'd get that excited. But when they got into the top four, I was whoa. And then they went to commercial.
Well, of course. You know, that.
And
that,
my that wife's like, what's going on? Like, they're in the top four. Like, what are you talking about? I tried to explain. And then my kid tried explaining all this to an 8-year-old.
Yeah. You know, that commercial break, some years it's like the worst thing ever, because if there's a LeBron or the French dude next year,
yeah,
when you know your team is number, like, in the top four, but you're wanting to be number one.
Yeah.
This year, it was more of a kind of a, yeah, all right, who cares? Because there's not necessarily that guy.
Right.
But there is that group of guys, and you had to be at a certain level to get into that group of guys. And as soon as you knew you're in the top four, you felt pretty good at, okay, we're with the group of guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, however it plays out, this is a total success already.
Yes.
Yeah, with the way that the lottery went. So it was a good night to be a Thunder fan. Good night for Oklahoma. And, you know, I hope that this creates a little bit more excitement with a player of this caliber that's going to be coming in. And that allows people to start going back, because I think it'd be nice for when and if the Thunder start winning at the level they did before, people are coming back. It would just be nice to see some excitement built. You know, I think that was the key for first iteration.
Yeah.
Even when they weren't very good, it was still pretty exciting to watch with Green and with Westbrook and with Durant as all young babies out mm-hmm. there playing. You could see them in that first season start out, 2-27 or something like that. But then all of a sudden, by the end of the year, you thought, hey, wait a minute.
Right.
This team's going to be pretty good.
Right.
You know, then obviously the next year, vaulting up to 50 wins and making the playoffs and giving the Lakers about everything they wanted in that first-round series. You know, then, of course, everybody was on the bandwagon. But even toward the end of that first season, people weren't going just because, hey, it's the NBA. People were going because you could see a little bit of what might be coming. And so hopefully that's kind of the way this thing goes, with even a more established guy in SGA than the Thunder had at all in that first season when they moved here from Seattle. So I think that part of it is good.
Yeah.
And tanking, don't think it's happening.
I think we're done with it. I think that was Presti alluding when he had that press conference with, let's see what happens after the lottery. I think the answer is clear. I think now you got a winning product or a team that's going to attempt to win other than lose.
Get your picks in. Here we go. Gooch, Scheffler, McIlroy, and Tiger. Golly, I hope you're right about the Tiger. I just hope he's playing Saturday. That way I get to see him.
The only way that would happen if he pulls out, right?
Well, he'd have to make the cut.
Oh, I'm sorry. My days got mixed up.
He'd either have to make the cut or rain, which there was chance for rain on Friday. That's been kicked back to Saturday at 40%. So I wonder what the timing is on that up there. I have to do a little bit more investigation work on that. Hey, there's a benefit dinner and fundraiser for Jeff Poole. Jeff is currently an Elk City firefighter in need of a kidney transplant. He's been approved for the transplant and is on the waiting list for waiting for one to become available. He's been with the ECFD for almost 12 years, an active member of the Red Knights. Be having the benefit dinner on Friday, June 3rd, Elk City Ackley Park at the South Pavilion. Dinner will be a Mexican pile-on plate, chips, ground beef, beans, and all the other fixings. Starting at 6, go until food is gone. It's donation only, so come out and support one of the Elk City firefighters as he waits on a kidney transplant, Jeff Poole. There will also be two quilts made by his wife that'll be selling chances for. The tickets there, $5 each or 5 for 20. For more information, contact Jeremy Jones, 580-497-6923, or James Chester, 580-821-1126. So Eastern Conference Game 1 last night, Boston looked really good in the first half, and then the third quarter happened. The Celts shot 2 for 15, only scored 14 points, outscored 39-14 in the third quarter, and Miami ran away from them, winning 118-107. Man, it was really interesting how that flipped, because I was thinking to myself in the first half, like, gosh, I messed this pick up. Doesn't look like Miami has the guys to beat Boston. And then all of a sudden, they just completely flipped it. Jimmy Butler, was sensational with 41 on only 19 shots. You know, and the defense for the Heat kind of stepped up, and before you know it, Miami gets that game one win. So anything that you take out of that game one, either more positively for Boston or more positively than you even thought for Miami.
Well, when you don't have Smart, he was out, correct? In Horford.
In Horford, yeah.
For a lesser extent, Horford. But we don't have those two guys. It doesn't help. So they competed admirably without those guys, but the result was still what I expected it to be with the Heat winning. But I when those guys get back, and they will, I think it's going to be a better series, more back and forth series than what we've expected. So, but it just doesn't help when those guys are out. I mean, Smart is the defensive player of the year and a heck of a good one. And without him, that, you know, Miami is a good team. We knew that going in. Even with Smart, we knew it was going to be a tough and fun game. So that's big for me. When those guys aren't playing, that hurts Boston.
Yeah, and they kind of needed just a little bit extra oomph. Robert Williams is really good for the Celtics in the paint. You know, gosh, in the first half, I think they referenced the score like 45 of their 50 or 62 from in the paint, and it may have even been more than that by the time the half was over. But then in the second half, Miami kind of cut a lot of that off, and then, of course, the Heat, they did a great job at the free throw line at 30 of 34. Getting there and then making him Butler missed 1 of 18. He was 17 of 18 from the free throw line. I think Hero gives him something that Boston, they've got like a poor man's Hero with Peyton Pritchard. You know, a guy that can shoot threes. He was 4 of 11 last night for 18 off the Boston bench, but he's not Hero.
Yeah.
As far as the total offensive game, the way that the Hero can get it done. So it's going to be a fun one. I don't know that it changes my opinion much on the series. I think it's still going the distance, and I favor Miami just because they're going to have the home court advantage in Game 7. But, you know, you could see where, at least in the first half for sure, you could see the advantages that Boston can take can have over Miami. Tatum's obviously one of those. Tonight, game one in the West with the Warriors and the Mavs. I'm anxious to see what happens. Does the regular season success that Dallas has had against Golden State over the past 4 years, does that translate at all when you've got guys, you know, game planning specifically for you in the playoffs? What does Steve Kerr come up with to pressure Luka and try to knock him off his spots and make somebody else beat you? And I think that's the key to the entire thing for me. Does Luka have enough help? Can Dallas give Luka Doncic enough help, especially in these games they're going to be played in San Francisco on the road? Can those role players, can the Dinwiddies, can, you know, Finney Smith, Maxi Kleber, can those guys provide enough on the road to help Luka enough for Dallas to win this series?
I don't know if they can, but I think Luka's still going to perform at a high level and keep this thing close. And maybe, just maybe, try to steal one on the road. I don't know if he has enough support around him. He has good players around him. I just don't know if he has enough support to compete with what the Warriors have and everything that they've built, you know, over the few years that we've seen it. But I that's not taken away how I think how competitive the games will be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they still got Luka, but it feels like a piece away from being one of the top teams in the West. I mean, they are one of the top teams in the West, but you see what I'm saying?
But a really
you know, to make people go, man, I have no idea how to pick this series because Luka's got this guy. Well, Steph has Klay, and he has Draymond and Wiggins. You know, Dallas isn't there yet. They will be, I think, but they're not there yet. This feels like that Dallas team. Oh, what am I trying? It wasn't 11. They won at 11.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't they get 4-10?
No, I mean they played in the finals in 06 against Miami.
Then they
won 67 games the next year and got beat by the Warriors in the first round.
Yeah, that's when they were the one seed. They
that's
were upset.
Right. Yeah, I mean they were in the Western Conference Finals a time or two. Got beat by San Antonio.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah,
kind of when Dirk, it was Dirk. It's really kind of reminiscent, isn't it?
Right. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. Dirk, he was always that really good player on a Dallas team that just can't get over the hump. And then they finally got the right pieces in the right place, and they made that run, that magical run at 11 and won it all. Kind of feels like the same pattern, which shouldn't shock anybody with Mark Cuban. And you know, he saw, okay, I'm going to get this guy. He's going to be my Dirk 2.0. You know, so it's going to be, I think it'll be fun games. And who knows? I mean, with Luka continues to play hot like he has been and carry that over from the last series to this series, if they can steal one on the road, then we got ourselves a series.
Yeah, it almost feels like that the 1999 national championship game between Virginia Tech and Florida State, when Virginia Tech had the best player in Michael Vick.
Yeah,
and Florida State had like the next eight. That's kind of the way this feels. Luka's the best, but then the Warriors have like the next four. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like they have the, or heck, maybe even the next five when you really look at the roster. So, and how I think Luka can be brilliant, and I think he can win a couple of games almost on his own or getting a little bit of help. But at the end of the day, I just think the team aspect and the Warriors just have the better team right now. And like you said, one more guy, some sort of one more guy, whoever that might be. And I think that's an interesting conversation to have. Who is that guy? Or the couple of guys that that Dallas really needs to target in the offseason to become the true championship contender. Because I get it, they're in the Western Conference Finals, they've made a run, but it doesn't feel like they're really at the level of the Warriors or either of the Eastern Conference teams yet.
It feels like they're in that rebuild mode in a way.
It's not quite there.
It's not. There's one more piece of this rebuild. And depending how this series goes, if it goes to seven and they bail out, and, man, you can see Mark Cuban going, all right, I know what we need. I'm going to give a blank check to any free agent that wants to come here and fill that role that Luka needs. We need that Scotty Pippen.
And that's the way they've tried to do this, and they have not been able to coax free agents there.
Yeah.
It's kind of surprising that they haven't, but they haven't. I mean, even with Dirk, you know, a lot of that first team in the early 2000s, that's drafted guys with Nash and Finley and Dirk. Then they trade Nash off, you know, Finley gets a little bit older. You know, they weren't able to get the guy they thought they could get, whoever that might be throughout all those years. And eventually, they kind of lucked into Tyson Chandler when Oklahoma City wouldn't trade for him because of his foot. You know, a couple of years later, there he is, making a huge contribution to a title team. You know, Peja Stojakovic got old, too old for Sacramento. Now he's down there knocking down threes. Jason Kidd, they wanted him as a young guy to come in there and play at Dallas. They couldn't get him, and then he turns himself into one of the best three-point shooters ever as an old guy, you know, filling roles. And then they just had the perfect mix of guys there at the end. And, you know, maybe
– But could the fact that now, if Luka has a great showing in this series – and say loses or, shoot, even pulls it out and bails out in the finals, could that be enticing enough for a free agent to go, I want to play with that guy?
I wonder how much people think Luka's committed to there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Do they believe Luka's in it for the long haul in Dallas? I know some down there believe that, some down there don't. Media members, anyway. And so I think that's part of it. How much behind the scenes is there? Oh, yeah, Luka's going to be there for the next 8 years, or he's got a wandering eye. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So then you wait on, okay, where's he going?
Which is the norm in the NBA now.
It is. It definitely is.
Yeah.
So is Luka more the normal NBA, or is he more Dirk? I think that decides your question there as far as what the players think about his long-term sustainability there in Dallas.
Yeah.
PGA Championship up at Tulsa this week at Southern Hills gets going in the morning, be a Thursday through Sunday to crown the year's second major champion. Southern Hills has a long, distinguished history of hosting major championships. It's an interesting place. It's got ties to Whitey Bulger.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
You know, that's not something you hear much, but Roger Wheeler in 1981, Tulsa businessman, owned the High Line down in Miami. Was murdered.
Did you see the Johnny Depp movie?
Which one?
I think it was called Black Mass.
No, I don't think I did.
He plays Whitey Bulger.
Oh, really?
And that scene is played out.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting connection that you don't hear much. Gil Hance, redesigned.
Why would you talk about it?
Well, you know. It's kind of the thing behind the thing, I guess. Gil Hance came in and redesigned Southern Hills back to its kind of original,
more original design.
Yeah, I said redesign, then forgot the word design right there in the same sentence. Anyway, and so what?
Is it a redesign if it's an original design?
What it's a re. Yeah, they call it a redesign. Back to it, really restoration. I think
there,
is what,
that's
is
proper
the better
word. Restoration
is better.
Yeah.
Back to its original design.
I like that.
You're going to see runoff areas chipping wise. That all the players are talking about. Chipping is going to be probably the most important thing because the runoff areas from the greens down to the chipping areas, it all kind of funnels away, right? The fairways are wider than they were back in 2007. They've taken out trees as well. But a lot of that kind of they've opened it up for worse things to happen. You know, instead of it, like on number two, instead of it just kind of bouncing around in the trees, they've taken some trees out. That way it bounces into the water, you know, off the tee or whatever. Mm-hmm. So in everything I've read with the changes that have been made since 07, everyone from players to riders to media people that are there so far this week, they think the changes that have been made to Southern Hills only elevate the guys at the top of the game, the guys with complete games, to have a chance to win, which, in my opinion, is the way major championships ought to be. We ought to have a hell of a leaderboard come Sunday, and I think we will here at Southern Hills. Who are of the local guys? I really think this first one's probably an easy answer, unless you – I don't know. But of the local guys, which one do you think has the best chance?
Well, I think that easy answer is Hovland.
Yeah, I think that's right, even though –
Is he familiar with this course?
Oh, heck yeah. Okay. You know they played it at OSU. I mean, you know they went up there and played it tons. The one thing that would worry about me about him is the same thing that worried me about him in the Masters, and that's the chipping.
Yeah.
And now that becomes a lot more important part of the game, does he have the variety of shots with the short game to be able to stay there? I don't believe he does right now at Augusta, and I think his results prove that. And so now with the shaved down areas around the greens and it funneling further away from the greens, is it more of a Masters type short game, plays that play away from his strengths? I think if you say anybody but Hovland, you're reaching a little bit. Taylor Gooch, though, has played well. And Taylor Gooch is another guy from Oklahoma that you know is familiar with Southern Hills. But who's familiar with this Southern Hills? The restorated Southern Hills and not the one from a few years ago. But let me ask you this. Who do you, of the local guys, who would you want to see in the running?
I've always liked Abraham Answer's story in his path and his climb to the, to a guy that's going to compete in tournaments like this. I mean, he's a guy I would want to see. Obviously, the OU connection. But I read a bio on him. I think it was in Golf Digest of where he came from. I kind of heard his story, but I wasn't real familiar with it. Just where he came from, how he started playing the game, how he wound up at a college in Texas and then transferred to OU, and now here he is on the pro circuit. So I've always liked his story, and because of local interest, local rooting interest, I root for that guy. So he's the guy I'd want to see there on Sunday.
Yeah, give me Ricky with his fall. There's an article on ESPN today about what he's trying to do to get back to where he was, as high as number four in the world at one point, mm-hmm. all the way down in the 160s now. I think he's just such a likable dude, and always has been. So I would take Ricky as far as the local guy that I personally want to see do well. I want to see there in the running toward the end. Pairings were released yesterday. It's always hard to tell who has the better of it until it actually happens. You know, does the wind blow hard tomorrow afternoon? And so the guys early get out before the wind starts blowing and get the better of the pairing. You know, you just never know until we see what the conditions are. But guys starting early tomorrow and then late on Friday, this the pairing or the grouping that I'm sure at 8 o'clock in the morning on Southern Hills, 95% of the people will be around number 10 tee, Tiger, Rory, and Jordan Spieth. Obviously, Spieth trying to complete the career Grand Slam with the PGA title. He would become the sixth guy ever to do that, third youngest behind Tiger and Jack. Right, I think behind them or right in front of them. I can't remember exactly which. But young guys, Hovland, Zalatoris, and Cam Smith. Then you got Hideki Matsuyama, Xander Schauffele, and Tony Finau. Those are kind of the three mega pairings or mega groupings that go early late. On the other side, the late early, so tomorrow afternoon, Shane Lowry, Brooks Koepka, and Adam Scott. You've got DJ, Patrick Cantlay, and Justin Thomas. And then you've got Rahm, Morikawa, and the Masters champ, Scotty Scheffler. So those guys will go late tomorrow, early on Friday.
You want the weather?
Yes.
I looked it up. Partly cloudy tomorrow, 91 the high, 8% chance of rain. South breeze steady at 16.
So not too bad.
Friday, partly cloudy, 88 the high, 24% chance of rain, south wind at 18. Saturday, this is the best chance of rain, is on Saturday morning, 36% chance.
Yeah, see, my phone earlier in the
high
week.
High of only 67.
Okay.
And I'm going to guess probably partly cloudy by the afternoon. It just says a few clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturday's breeze, where'd it go? 15 out of the north-northeast. So probably a little cooler than what we're used to at this time of year, especially up in northeast Oklahoma. I wonder about humidity, though. And Sunday, 71, partly cloudy, northeast breeze at 12.
Yeah, that's one interesting thing about this is they played the practice rounds with the south breeze. They're going to play Thursday and Friday with southerly winds, and then it's going to switch. And they're going to play exactly the opposite course on Sunday or on Saturday and Sunday because of the wind coming out of the north. Yeah, earlier in the week it had Friday as the best chance of rain. They backed that up to Saturday, so you wonder even if that doesn't really affect play and it's kind of overnight into the early morning hours
Get out there. Yeah, looking closer at it on Friday night, 69% chance. Thunderstorms likely in the evening, and the chance of scattered storms throughout. So that I'm sure that tapers over into Saturday morning chances.
Right.
So really narrowing it down, Saturday morning a 40% chance of rain. That diminishes as the day goes on.
Yeah.
So there could be some wet conditions to start Saturday morning. It could even be a delay.
Yeah, a little bit of a delay, which probably helped me if they don't start quite as early after Friday.
Why, Aaron?
After Friday. All right, let's make our picks. Who you got?
I hope I didn't break rules on
in
this,
order. To win the PGA.
1-3.
1-3.
I'll go with Spieth. He had a good showing last weekend at the Byron Nelson, and I always look at that. I look at who's playing good recently. I think that's a big thing in golf, and I think that carries over a little, not far travel for him, just straight up 35 where he was at. I think he's my favorite. I'll go with McIlroy. I think he'll be there at the top at number two. He's always kind of, you know, right there at the top of these major events. And then Matsuyama, you got my attention with him. He's such a machine. You know what I mean? Just how he plays. And I like his approach. And so I got him as my number three favorite. And my dark horse, I'll go with Shane Lowry. Other than the fact he has a beard, I guess. I don't know. I something about him, too. How about you?
I've got Matsuyama one.
Okay.
He played well last week, but this is ball striker's paradise, man. A big park. I really like Matsuyama. I've got Morikawa, too, because of the iron game, the short game. And I've got Patrick Cantlay, three. It feels like guys that play well at Phoenix play well at Augusta, and this feels like more of an Augusta-type Southern Hills than we've seen before. With the short game areas
and
wider fairways.
It
does. So I've got those three guys. Those three guys have played well at Phoenix, played well at Augusta at times. So I've got those three. Rory, I think this is a chance for Rory. I've got Hovland written down just because he hits it so well. Cam Smith was the hardest one. Cam and Spieth were the hardest two to leave off of my top three. We've seen Cam make birdies. We've seen him, his putter can get as hot as anybody. Spieth, short game-wise, he's creative, has all the shots. And Justin Thomas has hit it so well. He just hasn't been paid off, I think, with the results like he should have been for various reasons throughout the year. But when you look at the ball striking stats, he's better than everybody and has been so far this year. Just the results haven't quite caught up with how well he's hit it. My dark horse is Max Homa. Won a couple of weeks ago. He seems like a guy that's really kind of suited for this. The other guys I thought about, Zalatoris, eventually he's going to break through. Kevin Kisner feels like a Southern Hills type guy. And then Cam Young, a really young guy that's burst on this scene. But yeah, I've got Matsuyama. I think he takes home his second major championship. Can't wait.
Very exciting.
What do you think about what's a good week for Tiger?
Very similar to how the Masters played out for him.
Yeah, I think he's got to do better than that, health wise.
Well, I meant make the cut and play on the weekend.
Yeah, he can't be a not necessarily a non-factor. But if he makes the cut and then fires seven over both rounds on the weekend, that's not boding well for the prospects of Tiger Woods down the line, because to me that shows he ain't gonna get no better.
So he has to play better than what he did at the Masters, because I think in his mind
I think he has to show strength in the leg, like that the leg can make it through four rounds or even three. You know, it clearly made it through about 1.5 to 2 at Augusta. And then on the weekend, you could tell right off on Saturday, uh-oh, he don't look right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of then that leads to the issues. Putting obviously was awful, and that's not something you ever really say about Tiger Woods. So for me, and I think everything is looking toward St. Andrews later on in July. For him to really compete at a major, because of the ease of the walk, mm-hmm. the love for the course, you know, all of that stuff, I feel like this needs to be a better week for Tiger health wise. Which I think if it is, all reports are the golf game is good, and you know, you knock some rust off at Augusta from a short game aspect, especially the putting. For me, it's. If he doesn't look any better, if he has to make the cut, obviously, for it to be, you know, an improvement. But then if he just looks like he can play four rounds of golf, because that's the thing, he can win if he's healthy enough to win.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I mean, he can do it if he's healthy enough to do it, and I think that's the glimpse that we all want to see. Through Sunday, if that's in the cards of him making the cut and continuing on through the weekend, is what does he look like as he's doing the weekend? What does he look like health-wise? Is he stronger? He says he is. He says he's gained strength in that leg since Augusta. Has he really? And if he really has, then you're 2 months away from maybe something incredibly exciting with him competing down to the end in the British Open.
Yeah. Yeah, and you'd think, you know, that regiment that he went through at the Masters when he would, you know, play on Thursday and then immediately go into rehab mode with his team of doctors and physical therapists, you would think that would continue even after the Masters, right?
Oh, sure.
To get that leg stronger and stronger.
Oh, I think it continues
stronger.
Forever.
And it has to. And then and obviously it's going to continue in Tulsa. So we'll see. That's going to be a key, is seeing how – I mean, the little things too. How does he pick up the ball out of the cup? That's the one thing I kept looking at Augusta, was how is he bending over to pick that up? You know, and he kind of gingerly would do it and kind of extend that leg when he did it. And, you know, that was little tells for me.
Yeah. Does he have that little deal on the end of his putter that suctions it out of the hole or anything like that? I call it the Mar.
I think only the senior PGA guys have those, man.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because his swing looks good, and by all accounts, his short game is crisp. It's just a matter of What does he feel like, and how long can he last health wise?
Yeah,
if he can make it 72, who knows? Then we might talk. I'll be talking about something a little bit different than just making the cut.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Everybody have a wonderful Wednesday. We will be back tomorrow. OU and OSU golf doing well.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cow. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blitzed.